Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I'm bidding a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Good morning, traders and investors. Welcome to this May 24th edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. I'm Spencer Israel, as always, joined by Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick. On the show today, we got a couple things to discuss. Moody's downgraded China, so maybe that's a bullish sign for that market. We're going to talk about the follow-up on that discussion we had yesterday about buying the dip. And I know Dennis and Joel were watching CNBC yesterday, and we're going to talk about that so-called plunge protection team and what's really going on with this crazy market we seem to be in. We got a few other movers to discuss, a couple stocks and reporting earnings. We got that Fed meeting today looming over our heads, and our guest 8:35 will be JJ Kinahan, who can discuss any and all of that. He is the chief marketing strategist at TD Ameritrade. Joel, how's it going today? Joel.
I'm here. I just had to get that mute button. I'm doing well this morning. Quiet market here in the S&Ps. I was also trying to mute my CNBC there. 2398, that's unchanged on the day. A 5-point range knocking on the door, 2400. Yesterday's high right there, 99.50. All-time high, 0450. Nice crude rally, higher. Well, we're higher by 2 cents. So that's the sixth day in a row. And 10 out of the last 11 sessions. Gold in the red by 380, hanging out at 1250. Silver just clinging to $17, down 8 cents at 1706. 802 this morning. Dennis, how you doing?
Doing pretty good. Quiet. Quiet day, Joel.
It's quiet, and you know why? And we didn't even mention this on the pre-market show.
Why?
Fed.
Fed day.
Yep. But 2 no
o'clock?
Matter
2 o'clock.
Yeah. But you know, no matter what happens, the market's not going to go down. You know why?
Plunge protection team.
Exactly.
So if you were watching CNBC yesterday around 5 o'clock, Asher Edelman there, and I think I'm saying his name right, he's a legendary investor, was basically saying on CNBC that every market rally and basically every dip is being bought by the plunge protection team, and they are supporting this market here. And the plunge protection team, Spencer, do you have the details? This was something that was like pulled back in like from like Reagan days, wasn't it?
I don't have any details. You watched the segment.
Created by Ronald Reagan, I believe. This was after the stock market crash of 87. And basically a group that obviously comes in and buys stocks to protect the market. So Edelman thinks this plunge protection team is still at work here today in our markets and obviously working very hard here. And that's why every time we pull back, it's the plunge protection team. He actually says, I have no doubt that the plunge protection team is behind the market rallies.
Well,
what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, you know, maybe to some degree there's some kind of buffers like that. Maybe if the Dow's down 800 or 1,000 points or something like that. I mean, you can't, you know, say there's really direct buying from the Fed. But the thing that really caught my attention, he said last Wednesday when the Dow was down 250 that the PP team was in there buying spoos. Come on. I mean, if that's the case, and I told Dennis we were Skyping back and forth, if that's really the case, then I'm packing up. I'm moving to your cottage with you this summer because I don't want any part of this market.
This nonsense. It's, you know, okay, so yeah, maybe a plunge protection team exists, but we're in a bull market here. I mean, every fund manager that is underinvested, we talked about this in the show multiple times over the course of the last couple of years, scrambles to buy every dip. You don't need the plunge protection team. You don't need government intervention in this market because you have the natural plunge protection team, which is your underinvested fund managers. And they keep coming in on every dip and they're buying here. So, no, it's not government intervention. You could say indirectly it is because we know the Fed does support the market. And we know the Fed, you know, whenever the going gets tough, obviously will accommodate the market. And we know they're more market dependent than data dependent. But do I think, you know, we've got a team coming in and buying every dip and buying stocks up just to keep them up? No, I don't think that's the case at all. I think you have that natural buyer below, and that's the underinvested fund manager. So that is your plunge protection team, the underinvested fund manager.
Yeah, and I wish that they would, like, give us their ratings on stocks and stuff, you know, like the government upgrades, you know, AMD.
You want the government to give ratings on stocks. Yeah, if they're going to come in here and buy stocks, let us know which stocks you're buying.
All right.
That would be helpful.
Another bullish thing here for the markets to rally on, Moody downgrades China. FXI is the ETF for that. That is extremely bullish, Dennis.
Bad news is always good news in this market, isn't it? You can have whatever bad news and they seem to find a reason to buy it. I mean, that's, you know, a headline. Okay, well, Moody's downgrading. I think it's, you know, in any regard, even if we're in normalized markets, not sure we're going to sell off on that headline, but we know this market is resilient. And you know what? You were talking, you know, earlier too, just looking, you know, at a chart like Facebook. And we're kind of at the crossroads here. I mean, we had a significant sell-off last Wednesday when we were impeaching Trump. And we came back basically the next 2 days and got most of the losses back. But look at the chart like Facebook. Sells off heavy 5 points that day. Bounces back the very next day. Now you were talking 3 quiet days of consolidation here. Is this the calm before the storm, Joel, or the calm before new all-time highs again?
Well, you know, exactly what I'm going to look at in this.
I only complain when I don't have it and I need it.
What's that, Spencer?
Oh, was I not on mute? I'm sorry. I was.
Spencer just comes back in.
My bad.
That seems like Joel that messed up.
My bad. Yeah, that was my bad, guys. Sorry about that.
All right. We'll give Spencer a bye because he doesn't do it very often. Joel has to do it every day just because it's his thing.
Okay, Dennis, you know exactly what I'm looking at here. Basically, we had the all-time high of 53.60. We broke down to 44.60, 9-point move.
Talking Facebook, because Joel doesn't talk with the $100.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
He knocks off the $100, so 144.60 is what he's talking.
Right, and 50% retracement takes you right back up to 149 and change. On the rebound, you filled the gap from last Wednesday. Also, you have 2-3 highs in the same area. 2 highs, 8. I don't know. To me, I'm willing to play this thing either way. But you know, the trend's been up, so you got to look out a breakout here above 149. A low below 147.50, you know, you kind of take out the bottom of that 3-day range.
And just looking at other stocks, similar charts. I mean, it's been quiet here for a couple of days, but, you know, let's look at Apple because we haven't looked at Apple for a few days, and the stock sold off significantly again on the Wednesday, got down to just under $150, and the slow, steady climb back. And I mean, we're within striking distance of all-time highs here on Apple as well. What are your charts telling you here on AAPL?
That has a little bit more than a 50% rebound. I'm just looking at the dailies here, and 2 highs in the upper 154 handle. We're trading 154.05. So I'd say the pin maybe for Friday is going to be 155. Above that, the all-time high that was made at 156.65 on May 15th. So 155 resistance for now.
Let's jump over to the earnings parade here. A couple big ones reporting this morning. I want to jump to Lowe's, L-O-W. It is getting hit here a little bit. We had a signal from Home Depot off their earnings report when it popped on good earnings and then gave it back. Well, L-O-W here is just flat out down today, and I guess they were leaning the right way of the street yesterday because it sold off 2 points ahead of this report. Now we're down another 3 points here on L-O-W. Spencer, give us the details on L-O-W's earnings report.
Q1 adjusted EPS of $1.03 that missed the estimate by 3 cents. It was $1.06. Sales of $16.9 billion versus $16.96, so a hair light on the sales for Q1. They see their fiscal year 17 sales to increase about 5%, and they see EPS in the range of $4.30 to $4.64.
Do we know what the estimate was for the earnings?
Nope.
Is that within the range, 430
nope.
to 464?
I don't know. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I misread that. 430 is what is the guidance. 464 was the estimate.
Oh, so they're light on the estimates there too. Okay, so the triple miss here for Lowe's. Missing the top, missing the bottom, missing the guidance. That equals down it by my algorithm there, Joel. So the algorithms are working on this one today. Stock trading down $2.71, getting into a little gap area.
Yeah, now here's the question, Dennis. You got down to 76 even, but you're back up near $80. You needed to get more into the 75 handle. You actually needed to get to 75-93 to fill the gap. So I consider that gap filled. 76 low. Now you're back up near 80. I think it's going to be tough to buy this anywhere near that pre-market low. We start pulling back, people are going to feel like they missed the bottom here. Still down $2.59. In order to reach the bottom of yesterday's range, you need to get up to 82.15. But this one, I don't know. I think you're going to find buyers in any kind of dip here. I'm not saying it's going to go green on the day, but I think you're going to find buyers.
But buy the dippers, or maybe it's the plunge protection team that's working in lows here this morning. But, you know, it is an impressive comeback here because we got hit hard down to that 76.50, basically filling the gap. And we've been just slowly climbing back here for the last hour. And you can see on that pre-market chart that Joel's showing there, it's been a nice comeback here. So it is on the comeback trail. I agree with the 80 is now psychological for me. That is the top of the gap. If you wanted to just grab the actual number from the top of that gap on the gap day that we're looking back in March, the top of it or the bottom of it would have been 80.28. So that would be basically coming back to the top of that area. And I think that's where you might find some more resistance here, especially since we had a 76.50 print down there at the lows. Do we know what the volume was like on that 76.50? Was it light? Usually it's pretty light.
I could take a look at it here. Someone
that opening
on the
bar.
Yeah, that opening bar. 10,000 shares, Dennis. Someone.
Slight.
Yeah. And, you know, and that on that bar, which was a 15-minute bar, it traded a buck. It's in that 10,000 shares. So how much actually traded at 76? Probably
right.
Not much. But you know what? Once again, half of the whole number theory comes in lows.
Let's talk NVIDIA, which is making a new all-time high here once again today. SoftBank taking a position. That's your new catalyst. Everybody's taking a position in NVIDIA, maybe even the plunge protection team. Stock is up $3.67 here in the pre-market, breaking out through the 140 handle. New all-time highs for NVDA.
And I after that earnings gap and go, I'm like, I'm always so inclined to short those things. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to buy some stupid calls in this, you know, like 135, you know, something that was cheap. And I never pulled the trigger. I never shorted it, but I never pulled the trigger on the long. Nice gap and go. Right now, someone wants to sell a little stock at 142 even. You made a pre-market high there just in the 7:45 to 8 o'clock bracket at 142 even. Next high, 141.99. So someone starts to wiggle out of some stock there. And Dennis, we were looking for a sympathy play, and this AMD just has not been that sympathetic. Gone opposite ways. Is this time to pick up some AMD?
There's been a deviation here, and I was saying, you know, a few months ago that the NVIDIA charts and the AMD charts looked very much the same until we really, you know, we got to March, and now they've started to deviate, and you're right. NVIDIA and AMD went the opposite way, and it was probably a little bit to do with earnings. I mean, the AMD earnings were not that great, and obviously NVIDIA has been just taking off here as of late. I don't know. Maybe there's some catch-up to do here on AMD. I'm still interested here. Like I said, I kind of wanted to buy it in the 10 handle. It's giving me another shot here, close at 1089. I know in the pre-market it's up at 1106. I'm interested. You know what the one thing though is? It's not really my style of a stock because it isn't really making money. Like you said, what did they make, one penny or lose a penny last quarter? Or what were their earnings last quarter, AMD?
Let me go to my trusty Benzinga Pro here.
Oh,
and actually their report. You got it there, Spencer?
For AMD. Yeah. Oh man, we got a lot.
They actually lost 4 cents last quarter, Dennis.
See,
I'll
tell you, you know, my own personal algorithm that I run, and obviously I'm saying the algorithm in my head that I run in my invest portfolio is I like my stocks that I own in my invest portfolio to make money. So when it's losing 4 cents, it doesn't really fill that criterion. I do throw the odd speculative stock in there. And I wouldn't call AMD a speculative stock, but, you know, I'd like to see. And I think AMD eventually is going to start to make some money here. So maybe we could look out. Do we have some estimates for next quarter? Can we, you know, are they estimated to at least make money next quarter, Spencer? Or is it too early for estimates for next quarter?
Let me look for 1 second and get a better idea for you. I'm not sure they do.
Not all fundamental fundies on you guys here this morning.
It might be a little early. Yeah, I don't see any I don't see any estimates.
Because we just reported here, so yeah, we're still 2.5 months early. Away. But in any regard here, I like my companies to make money, but I'm interested in AMD down here. I mean, it was very loved last year. I mean, one of the most loved stocks, like Ace was saying last year. This stock went in 2016 from $2 up to the end of 2017 to $11, and then continued the run in early 2017 up to $14.50, obviously, before we've, or $15.55, before we've cascaded down to the $10. I know, you know who else likes this stock too? Joel?
Who?
Kenny Glick from hitthebid.com.
Oh, you missed a fun show with him when we were having the baby. We had a great time. You know, I'm also looking, there's another thing here that I don't like about AMD here, and I'm looking at the revenues, and you go back when it was a really a low price stock. This is in 2012. They had revenues of $1.58 billion. And they made less than $1 billion last quarter. So I don't know.
The trend of the revenues either. We don't like the fundies on this.
No.
At least, so at least the earnings data. We'll have to dig deeper here. I'm still interested in AMD. I'm interested just because I see the run that NVIDIA's had. I feel like they could come back in and start loving the stock again. That's the way the street works. And right now, everybody is throwing it out. You know how I love stocks when everybody else decides that they hate them. But in any regard here, I like my companies to make money. It doesn't look like AMD is making a lot of money here yet. So that's a challenge for me to put this one in my investment portfolio for that reason.
All right.
I'm interested. I'm intrigued. Right. I'll say I'm intrigued by AMD at these prices.
I mean, you're buying here at 11, double bottom area at the 20. You know, if you're looking for a shorter term trade right there, I did get the big boost on the supposed Intel contract that never came to fruition. So looking for a catalyst here, a company that did make money last quarter, and they made a lot of money into it.
Ooh, INTU flying here this morning. This is one of your big winners of the day. If I go to my up filters and take a look into it, it's number, well, it's down there a little ways because we've got some smaller stocks. It's like number 7. But anyways, INTU, Spencer, how'd they do?
Q3 adjusted EPS of $3.90. That beat the estimate by 3 cents. Sales of $2.54 billion versus $2.5 billion estimate. So they beat on both those numbers in the Q3. As far as Q4 guidance goes, EPS coming in above the estimate. 15 cents was the estimate. 16 to 18 cents is what they see. Sales $795 to $815 million. That is higher than the $777 million estimate.
They also pretty good numbers.
Also
raised stock taking.
They also raised the outlook for the fiscal year.
They said everything right.
Yep.
This stock has been a monster. Bring out the monthlies on this thing. 2010, the stock was $28. It's got to be one of the best performers in the last 7 years, up at $140 here this morning. Tacking on another 11 points from a good earnings report here. Everybody leaning right on the street this way too, Joel, because they were buying it yesterday. It was up a couple of bucks. INTU, it's going to be tough for you to find levels when you're at all-time highs.
Yeah, before I do that, when I bring up the daily on something like this and I see, wow, that one day it plunged to 116 and then opened the next day at 124 and never looked back, I look for a catalyst. And on this one, Dennis, the catalyst was an initiation of coverage by Benchmark.
Benchmark, and they're mid-tier.
Yeah, with a price
what
target.
What day was that?
That was April 27th. The day, did you see it plunged? It made a low of 1562, closed on the low of the session.
There was something else that happened that day.
Really?
Yeah, what was it that day? Because we did. I remember we plunged, and then we were, boom, we were right back. It kind of pulled like a take two that day. Remember TTWO 2 days ago, tanked on the game release, and then yesterday morning, good earnings
and
stock pumped.
This is on April 24th?
27th.
Well, the big sell-off was April 26th.
Right.
And then the next day, we got it all back, plus obviously took off even more. There was some goldfish. There's something, though.
On April, I'm looking on Pro. What are you seeing, Spencer?
Yeah, not for those dates.
Well, we got to dig deeper. So I don't think it was just a benchmark upgrade that's talking on 10 points. I think there might have been something else there, too. But anyway, stop.
All right, let me give the levels.
Another 11 points there today.
Let me give the levels. If you get selling at 141.49, you will be selling it basically $11 over its previous all-time high of $130.10 that was made in yesterday's session. So not only is it making a new all-time high, it's blowing away the all-time high. And these kind of scenarios, I like to see it get through that level and just keep on going and not look back. So minor resistance in 141.49. They got it up here, Dennis, on not a ton of volume. So we'll see when, well, it doesn't trade a ton of volume either. So we'll see what the big boys want to do off the open. I'd be, if I was long, boom, I'd be cashing the register. A cautious short, though, if you're looking at INTU.
Estraza was saying that was the day the Trump tax plan was released, and that's bad for QuickBooks and TurboTax. So maybe that was the initial sell-off there or with it. I'm just trying to follow in the chat here, Straza. So I have the goldfish memory here. Straza's obviously got a very good memory.
Well, he's talking about the day that it went down, and that's correct. We were still trying to find the catalyst, what, you know, why it rebounded, and I think maybe we'll give that analyst at Benchmark a call because that was one hell of a call.
My short-term day trading has me have that goldfish memory. Like 6 seconds, you know, I've already forgotten about my trades from even yesterday or the trades I even made early this morning. I forget about those too if I didn't look at them in my P&L. All right, so one other earnings report here of note to talk about. Tiffany's TIF stock trading down 5 points here in the pre-market. I mean, it's a retailer, right? So, you know, if they beat or if they miss, doesn't even matter. It's a retail stock, so it goes down. But how do they do, TIF, Spencer?
Tiffany reported Q1 EPS 74 cents versus a 70 cent estimate, sales of 900 versus $913 million, so light on the sales, but a beat on the EPS. They see their fiscal year 17 sales increasing by the low single digits year over year, and that's pretty much all you need to know.
Stock down $5.50 here. TIF taking out the critical 90 support. I mean, we shouldn't dog Tiffany's too much because this has held up better than the majority of your retail stocks. That being said, it's still a retail stock and retailers are just out of favor.
And it did have a very nice comeback that ended with a double top on Monday and Tuesday at the 94.40 level. First low, the first crack you made of the low was in the 86 handle here, or the current low in the pre-market is 86.75. Only a buck above that. Kind of hard to find a level. I will just say at 86.19, that was your February 21 low. That could be a potential area of support. I mean, maybe do a retracement because this thing has had a nice rally and actually in the green in 2017. We come up from the 80 level, and what was the high of the move? The high of the move was 97.27, 18. So you take half of that. 86.87 is 50% retracement. I expect to find a little support in that area.
Buzzy talking about INO, which is Inovio Pharmaceuticals. The stock is up 59% here in the pre-market. Closed at $7.13. It's now trading up at $11.50. Spencer, what is going on in INO? I'm assuming something good with some type of drug.
They have an HIV vaccine that elicited a 100% immune response rate in a clinical study. I'd say 100% is pretty good.
That's a good number.
Yeah.
So here's something, you know, it's an interesting question too. I mean, in the 80s and obviously even early 90s, HIV was a big thing. You heard so much about it. You don't hear about HIV at all anymore. I mean, have we kind of conquered this? Like, is it to the point where, you know, people who actually get HIV and AIDS actually can survive? Are we at that point yet? Sounds like with this drug, it's going to help too, but.
Dennis, we've been hanging around too long with each other. That's immediate what I thought. Like,
yeah,
because
the thing about everybody, it was like a death sentence back in the late 80s. You got HIV and you're in trouble. And I mean, now, you know, you never hear me, you know, people, you know, dying of HIV. You hear people get it, but you just don't hear people dying it anymore.
Yeah, I'm a little skeptical of that as well. I just see a spike in there, as we were mentioned, it spiked up to 1163. Now, if you're looking at the monthly charts here and you've been holding on to the stock since April or May of 2016, about a year ago, you had a double monthly top at 1150, 1169. So if it gets back up, two monthly tops to me, that that is of significance. So if we get back up there and you maybe, you know, try and let go of a long, of course, when this news come out, they can really run on the upside. Actually, three monthly highs there. Let me correct myself. April, May, and June of 2016, all the highs at the 1150 area.
And remember, we're talking about a company that had a market cap as of yesterday of $529 million. So we know these small speculative biotech plays and pharmaceutical stocks, when they get, you know, good responses, you see moves like this, and these moves can get crazy. So, you know, to jump in here and just say, okay, well, yeah, this is overdone, I'm going to sell it. We know on these small companies, $500 million company, they can get really overdone, they can get crazy. And sometimes it's just good, you know, like if you're going to have a potential drug that's going to come, you know, that can change the whole fortunes of the company there. So speculative stock, it's going to move like a speculative stock. So expect a lot of volatility in this one.
What about the short interest here? We are racing to find out the short interest.
Well, I have 12, but, you know.
Yeah, that's not that high. I have 13.38, so yeah, not super high.
Not out of the ordinary for some of these smaller biotech companies. So, I know, having a big pop here this morning. And jumping back over to, well, we're going to move away from earnings here. I want one more I want to talk about. The Container Store. The store that I just do not understand, TCS, but it's rallying in my face here this morning. I don't have a position, but I've been kind of bearish the stock, I think, since like 20. But anyways, it's getting a pop this morning. It's up 33% here, TCS stock trading up 552. Spencer, give us the details for the Container Store, TCS.
Q4 EPS of 17 cents versus a 9 cent estimate.
Ooh,
sales
big
of
money.
Sales of 221 versus $214.7 million, so beat on the sales number as well. They see their fiscal year EPS higher than the estimate. 22 cents was the estimate. 25 to 35 cents is the guidance for the fiscal year, and the sales coming in higher as well.
I remember about 5 years ago, and I'd never heard of this company, and my wife says, the Container Store. We were in Chicago, and she's like, I want to go to this store. It's called the Container Store. I want to go check it out. So I went in the store with her, and we're looking around, and I'm like, is that all they sell? It's containers? Like, I'm like, it's, you know, and I'm looking. It's a huge store. I mean, it's not even like a little store. It's a big store full of literally stuff to just store stuff in. And I'm like, holy cow, I don't get this whatsoever. My wife thought it was cool, and you know, but that being said, I don't think she's ever went back to one, so even though she thought it was cool. And now, obviously, the stock has went from $47 down to $4 or $5. I mean, I don't get this one at all. Remember that movie, and Spencer and Joel, we're taking it back. Remember that movie UHF, way back with Weird Al Yankovic? We're going back to like the 80s. I'm probably before you were born, Spencer, but going back to the 80s, and there was like, they were going on a road trip to Spatula City, and it was like, the song was like, we sell spatulas, and that's all. It was a whole store that just sells spatulas. Well, I don't know. Here's a store that sells containers. I don't get it.
I mean,
it's popped back 36%. They made some money, but I guess you'd call it a one-trick pony when they only sell containers, so this isn't for me.
Dennis, is this the first time you've ever sang on the show?
Definitely not.
I don't sing well.
Definitely not.
They kicked me out of choir when I was a little kid. So.
No.
I think I was the worst singer in the whole world.
pre-market high of 5.98, so we've backed off a little bit to 546. Maybe you have some paper up there at $6, so keep an eye on that, a psychological level, big move, low price stock. So, you know, the only thing about shorting this one is like, okay, you know, the quants come in, oh, up on big volume, low margin, just let me buy. So if you're trying to short it, get through $6, I think I'd have to let it go.
I gotta see what the short interest is on this thing. Let's go check it out, because I bet you it's high. It is. Oh, it's not that high. It's like 8% only. So I guess maybe all the shorts covered already, because it's a $4 stock now from 40. All the easy money was made on the short side here. So,
and you know what's so nice. You know what's so bad about this stock? I can't even think of a sympathy play.
Well, I don't know if there's any other stores that just sell containers. If Spatula City was a public company, we could, you know, have a sympathy play there. But let's move on here. We're digging ourselves a hole that we might not be able to get out of. It's 8:29. We're going to get imbalances in 1 minute. I just want to highlight one major analyst, Credit Suisse, coming in and upgrading the steel stocks. They're upgrading Steel Dynamics, STLD. They are upgrading US Steel, which is X. And they are upgrading Nucor Steel, NUE. Full disclosure, still got NUE in my investment portfolio. Let's talk here. Steel, what are you thinking of this call from Credit Suisse?
X was on my radar, not for any kind of fundamental reasons, because if you look at their earnings reports, they are as inconsistent as you could be. But if you're a Trump stock believer and you are a believer in infrastructure and you are a believer in stocks filling gaps, then you need to own this stock because it had the big bump right after the election. It came down and more and filled that gap from Election Day. You only needed to get to 21.39, so you more and filled the gap. Now you kind of make a little bit of a rounding bottom here, even though it's not completely done yet. So I could get on board with this one. I mean, obviously, if it took out the low of the move at 18.55, you'd want to cut it out. But here, buying it at 20.50, 20.60. Even if you're buying at that elevated level, you're giving yourself 2 points on the downside, and you're talking about a, uninitiated 2-for-1 stock split. So based on that, I'm not selling this thing. I don't know if I'm out here buying it off the open up 35 cents.
Nice candle. And I'll give you that too. And if you go out to the monthlies, it's even interesting as well, because I can kind of see this level here just around 20 bucks. And it kind of just jumps out at you there because back in April 2016, a multiple highs right around 20. That became resistance. We eventually got through it in the summer of 2016, but then we cut back through it and then we struggled at it again. So I'm saying the old resistance becomes new support trick maybe here around 20 bucks. So yeah, it holds on 20. That's where I didn't think my out would be. If I was doing this for a swing trade, if I'm buying it at 2080 this morning, not saying I'm doing it, but I'm just setting it up. If I was buying it here, I think it starts cutting through 20 again, I'd probably be concerned. But if it holds 20, maybe it can bounce here a little bit. And you're right, all it takes is a couple, some more love coming back for Trump. And this was a Trump stock.
Right. It was a Trump stock here. And, it, 20 is also a psych level, well, especially when you trade. I mean, I don't see how this thing just got over 40. What was the high of the move there? 41.83. Another thing, too. I mean, even if you just don't want it, the reasons that we gave you that weren't good enough. What have you been short this thing since January? When did that peak? It peaked in February. I mean, shorts have to cover sometime. Not a huge short interest in the issue, but I wish I would have been looking at this yesterday. But nice little bump up here. We did get a move over 21 in the pre-market. That was actually a 21.16 high. On the daily charts, you have three highs at 21.50. So we'll keep an eye on that if the rally continues.
All right, I got a setup here for you. This one's interesting chart. I'm looking at Twitter here. 106,000 shares to sell as an opening imbalance, but not even looking at that. Looking at the technical chart here. 18. I kind of see a head and shoulders happening here with Twitter. And, that neckline right here hanging out at 18. You got a low at 17.97 back on May 18th. You got a low of 17.98 yesterday. That's a level it has to hold. And if it cuts through 17.90, and these are all, trading is all setups. And, I'm not saying coming here short at 18.10, but I'm saying if it starts to take out 17.97, let's say it starts going 17.90, 17.85, there's a lot of air below here on Twitter. So it's setting up that, if it can take out that 18, the line holds 18, the bulls are still in charge. But I'm looking at this and it starts cutting through. There might be a setup on the short side.
Right. And, it's sold off the last few days here, sniffed the 19 handle, almost sniffed 20 back on the 16th. Dennis is talking about the lows at 17.97, the low from yesterday at 17.98. And then things open up to 17.35. And I believe that was the low when they had the good earnings report. I mean, I can't believe this thing didn't get hit the day that it was down, right? Was it for some people? It was down for a good
didn't
part
get
of the
hit
day.
At all, yeah.
Yeah. So kind of a little bit of a delayed reaction here in Twitter. Dennis, 834. Do you want to try and cover one more earnings or rating stock, or should we go to
Shake Shack? SHAK getting initiated with an overweight of Piper. And the Shaq is bid up here this morning. There's no trade, 7 shares of trade here this morning. But it's bid up at 37.23. Best offer is up at 37.95. So it's going to want to climb up here. I mean, the only thing, you know, working against it, ugly candle yesterday. So everybody who bought it yesterday might be itching to sell if it pops up today. I think it might be able to, you know, get up towards the upper end of that range from yesterday with overweight from Piper. But there's a lot of resistance up at 38.
And Dennis, you have a daily high here at 38.28. That's your 2-day high. Actually, you have 3 highs between 38.04 and 38.28. So away from there now, but that would be a bona fide breakout if you could clear the highs from what would that be? Thursday, Friday, and Monday. All right, 8:35 here. Who's our guest today?
JJ Kinahan, Chief Market Strategist for TD Ameritrade. So we'll be right back with Mr. Kinahan. All right, welcome back to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. I'm Spencer Israel here with Joel Conan and Dennis Dick. We're on the line with JJ Kinahan, Chief Market Strategist at TD Ameritrade. JJ, how's it going today?
Great, Spencer. Glad to be on with you guys. Always fun to catch up with the Benzinga crew.
All right. I know Joel and Dennis will have some questions for you, but I just want to get your thoughts here. Overall market or this rally that we're in, what are your general thoughts about the state of this rally? I've talked to you before. You've called it the most hated rally. Just give us your overall thoughts on what is going on with this market.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. If you look at what's going on in the market, we continue to rally despite the fact that pretty much every press report you read, if you watch any financial TV, et cetera, all everyone talks about are the problems we're facing and why we shouldn't be going up. And yet we continue to go up and we're right near all-time highs or at all-time highs on every major index. And the other thing that's amazing to me, too, is I spend a lot of time, obviously, talking about VIX. And everyone keeps telling me why volatility needs to be higher. Now, is there a lot of things going on in the world that you could say, oh, my God, this situation is terrible? Absolutely. But the market continues to be resilient, fights off every piece of bad news. So what I would say to people, and this is something that, we've all learned as traders over the years, trade what's there, not what you want it to be. So you may want VIX to be higher, but it's not. It's still trading below 11. So you have to trade that as what it is. Not to say you can't put on hedging type positions or you can't put on positions that you think will do better in the future. Of course, that's what you do as a trader. But it bothers me when people say this has to be higher. You know what? It doesn't have to be higher. And yesterday I had a question from someone that said, do you think the VIX is broken? I said, well, everything I learned about volatility was that when the market goes higher, volatility goes lower and vice versa. We're at all-time highs. So do I think it's broken? No, I don't think it's broken. I think theoretically it's working as it should.
Yeah, don't think. Just wanted to ask you one question, just going back to something that was on CNBC yesterday, talking about the plunge protection team. And actually, one of the guests theorized that even last Wednesday, when the Dow was down nearly 300 points, the plunge protection team was in there. Now, I heard a rumor that you are part of the plunge protection team. So just wanted to get your comments on that.
The plunge protection team. I'm not quite as familiar with that one, I have to be honest. But so one of the things I will say that I find interesting, and I think you saw this last week, it's come to the point where so many people, and from this one, I'm going to switch from retail to professionals a little bit. So many of the professional groups have gotten so slammed, shall we say, buying VIX and trying to sort of pick bottoms, that one of the things I think they've said to themselves is, we're willing to let the VIX move 30% against us before we go and buy protection. Because I think one of the things last week, it moved 44% that day, and it moved 30% really quickly. And I think one of the things that these groups have said is, we're so tired of buying this premium and having it going in our face, we're willing to let the VIX move 30% before we really go in and buy protection, because we're still going to buy protection under the 14 level. So that to me is a little bit of a change in talking to a lot of my friends who trade, you know, for bigger groups or funds or whatever it may be. And I think there's been a little bit of switch in mentality. That's the one thing that I do think might be a little bit dangerous over time, because what it does mean is that if they're all saying we're willing to give up 30%, well, that means they're all going to be running in at the same time. So that might be 50%.
JJ, do you have any expectations for the Fed today?
I really don't. I would expect that these notes to say, I think, what we all expect, and that is we are leaning toward a rate hike in June. As long as the numbers support it, the economy is getting stronger overall. Because if you remember when they met before this down move. So I think that they will talk about the strength of the economy and that it continues to improve in a way they would like. And I would think that they will still cite the one thing they'll cite a note of caution, I guess, on will be inflation and the fact that perhaps inflation isn't moving as fast as they would like. So but overall, I'm not expecting any surprises.
JJ, one thing I like that TD Ameritrade does at Thinkorswim is, you know, they give you a feel for, you know, what the customers are doing, retail customers, how they're getting into the market or getting out of the market. It's only 13% really overall. But what have you seen? Has there been any interesting trends here over the past week or the past month with your customers?
Yeah, so I would say one thing about that 13% figure to start. First of all, thank you for the kind words. But the 13%, I think that may be just measuring equities, because obviously we're a big part of the options markets, and now futures are more than 11% of our daily trades also. Sure. And so I think first of all, the retail client has become much more sophisticated. This isn't necessarily the client that you saw back in the 80s. And because of the great education, you know, that I believe our firm does, as well as the amount of great education that's available for free, what you guys do every day through your show is, you know, and I hope people realize this is great education. Yes, you guys are delivering it in the form of a radio show, but I think sometimes people forget that they're still getting great education through things like this. So, you know, the amount of great stuff out there, it really is amazing. With that said, the retail client's much more sophisticated than they were, and that's why we started. We have something called the IMX, which measures our client's activity every month. And in order to be included in there, you had to have made at least one trade in the month. The reason we started it is exactly for this. You know, I think people could make an argument to me that, hey, the person who spends longer planning their vacation than planning their investments probably doesn't make good decisions, and I would agree with that. But the people who interact at least once a month, watch their account, kind of keep track of it, I think do make good decisions. And our IMX over history actually shows that they've led the S&P 500 and much of the moves over the last 5 years. With that said, the interesting trend I'm seeing now is our clients are turning back toward yield-enhancing stocks. We saw it last month, and we saw it again last week, in that when I talk about that, you know, the Verizons, the AT&Ts, the Fords of the world, as they were getting beaten up for the last couple of weeks, our clients were actually buying them, which on its surface, you would be like, why are they buying these beaten stocks that are beaten up? Number one, they think there may be a floor in place. I mean, the timing ended up being, you know, fortuitous for Ford, not that anybody knew anything, but with them replacing their CEO, obviously they moved higher. But the other thing about those three stocks particularly, their yields are all near 5%. And when we're sitting in this environment where I don't think any of us, had we had a bet at the beginning of the year, would have bet that the 10-year rate would still be this low. I think we would all bet that it was closer to 3%. So what people, I think, are searching for is saying, hold on, the yield play isn't necessarily done. And with that, if you can get some capital appreciation from the underlying stock at the same time, that could be a very good thing. So, again, when you have this 2.25-ish 10-year yield, getting a 5% yield on a quality stock is something that we're starting to see a bigger trend over the last couple of months, and I find that very, very interesting.
JJ, now that we're pretty much all the way through earnings season. What was your overall impression for the earnings for the March quarter?
I thought it was great. I don't know, you know, what your guys' take was overall, but I thought it was really, really a good earnings season. The thing that I liked the best about it, to be very honest with you, was actually not so much that the numbers were beating, et cetera, which in many cases they were, but I think the real change in tone came from the CEOs. And what I mean by that is the CEOs were creating this great picture of growth in the future. Think about the difference in earnings calls a year ago till now. A year ago was, we can continue to meet these numbers and, you know, hopefully in some point in the future, we'll get a break and be able to grow. This season, the earnings calls I was listening to was, hey, we see growth potential. And the international companies was not only in the U.S., but we see growth potential around the world. And so with that, we have high hopes for the rest of 2017 and really high hopes as we go into 2018. So this is stuff we haven't heard in a while, and that really makes me exciting. The other thing about it is many will say, well, hold on, retail had bad numbers. And what I would say is if you look at consumer spending and you look at like the Amazons of the world, et cetera, the consumer's still out there spending. The difference is that the traditional brick and mortar stores are trying to figure out what their business model is. So it's not that the consumer's not there. It's that the retailers have to figure out how to get the consumer in their doors, be it online or through, you know, as I just said, traditional brick and mortar.
One final question for you here, and this is kind of alluding to yesterday and way the market is reacting to geopolitical events. And I know you've been in the markets for a long time. Dennis and I have traded through the financial crisis in 9/11. I mean, buying the market on these kind of geopolitical events, I mean, it's kind of unprecedented. I mean, it's just the buy the dip mentality. You know, what could you just attribute this incredible resilience in the market to?
Yeah, and it's sad, actually, in a lot of ways, right, that we've become immune. And I hate to say it that way, but we kind of, as a society, in many ways, become immune to this stuff. You know, you saw it. Remember the Spanish train bombing a few years ago? I don't know if you remember that day. We opened down initially, but came back throughout the day. So I think it's just one of those things where if it's not a major slowing down, you know, business and slowing down countries for many, many days, it's going to be like, that's very sad, sad to see it, but, you know, business continues and life continues. And that really is unfortunately what's happened. And the other thing is, I think what we've also all learned sadly enough is that it can happen anytime, anywhere. And you just hope that when it does, it's really, really a small amount of damage. I mean, obviously, if it's one of your loved ones, it's never small. And, you know, I feel terrible for the people in Manchester, particularly because there were so many children involved. But the unfortunate part of the world, the unfortunate part of that is it really doesn't slow down. You know, the country of England didn't completely close. You know, they went on a high security alert, et cetera, but business still continues there. So I think that that's the bigger thing is if it's not stopping the economy and it's not going to have a major long-term effect on the economy, people, unfortunately, I guess, really just kind of say that's sad, that's tragic, but life continues.
We've been on the line with J.J. Kinahan, Chief Market Strategist at TD Ameritrade. J.J., thanks so much for hopping on with us. Love your commentary. We'll be in touch.
All right, guys. Always a pleasure. Have a great day. Thanks for having me on.
All right, good luck out there today. 8:49 now, about 10 minutes left on the show. Is there anything that we missed or talked about on the pre-market show that we haven't gotten to yet?
There's a few things we've missed, actually. A couple disaster earnings reports here, which I just was looking here. Dycom Industries, DY, it's now down 17 points here in the pre-market, Spencer. The stock is ugly, closed at 108.05. It's trading down in the $90 handle, $90.45 here right now on DY. The details here from that report, because they must have said something pretty ugly.
I do. Q3 adjusted EPS of $1.30 versus $1.19, so beat on that. Sales of 780 86 for $736 million. So they beat on the Q3 numbers. Let me pull up the reason, though, for the fall in today's share price. And you know what? I mean, I don't see anything that jumps out at me.
It must have said something going on.
Yeah,
maybe
some,
from the call
some
or something.
Something
from the guidance, because stock isn't going to trade down 17 points if they didn't say something that the investors didn't like. In any regard here, stock has been a monster. It has been running up forever. I mean, at the beginning of 2015, this was a $30 stock. Now it's a $108 stock. So it might be a case of lofty expectations here as well. Stock did hit, actually, a new all-time high yesterday, taking out the 110. Handle just briefly, but that breakout is a massive fake out here, obviously, because the stock is down 17 points here now, and the pre-market trading down $90.
You know, this one has me scratching my head because this is a construction engineering company, and I mean, definitely different than Cat and Deer, but if you think of those
telecoms to the telecom.
Yeah, telecom infrastructure. Okay, that explains it a little bit. But Street leaning the wrong way into this one, making a new all-time high yesterday. Pre-market low was just made into session at 88.60. Looking at the daily, you're falling into a gap area. Maybe this was from their last earnings report. So boy, oh boy, 88.60 besides that pre-market low. Over the next couple days, maybe to get down into the lower 83 handle, you need to get to 83.13. That was your high in February 28th to fill the gap here. So really a tough trade. And another thing to keep an eye on is, you know, you did make that low at 88.60. You're $2 above it with a green candle. So let's see if that, as always, the pre-market low will be a good level.
With the guidance there, I was just digging here. It looks like they're looking at the next quarter at $1.35 to $1.50, and analyst estimates were up at $1.79. So it's very light, the guidance, and that is the reason stock is trading down 16% here in the pre-market. Jumping over to the other stock that I wanted to talk about, and that's another auto parts provider there. We saw the disaster that was AutoZone yesterday. While AAP following through on their sympathy move yesterday with AutoZone, they have a disaster of their own. It's down 5% here in the pre-market. Wow. Spencer, earnings for Alpha Peter.
Yeah, oof. Q1 EPS, $1.60 versus an estimate at $2.18. Sales of $2.89 billion versus a $2.95 billion estimate. So they missed big on the EPS, missed a little smaller, though, on the sales.
Down $8 here, Joel. We lost $10 yesterday on the AutoZone report at one time. I know it ended up only being down 7. It was clinging to support at that 140. We talked about that support on the show. That is gone. We are now trading down. We got to go to the monthlies here. I do notice a low here. Back in February, second week of February in 2016, we got down to 131.59. And I wonder if we don't test that low here today.
All right, let's take a look at the pre-market low. Pre-market low was 130.50, trading a couple bucks above that. Dennis is looking at some monthly levels here, and you need to go back. Did we 131.59? That was your February of 2016 low. 130, also a nice psych level, but just on the upside, the highest you've been since the earnings report is 135.50. But Dennis, I want you to pull up a chart, and I guarantee you that you've never traded this stock. But
really?
Are you ready?
Yeah.
SORL.
I've traded it.
You have?
Yeah, but I know I've traded it before because I can remember it, but I don't know anything really about the company other than, you know, it says it's an auto parts provider, but wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so
maybe they're eating everybody's lunch.
It's right. And it's they do truck manufacturing in China.
Wow.
And so I don't know. I mean, I've been watching this thing have a big run up here, so I don't know. I mean, it's not a true sympathy play. Yeah, it's been a monster. I think that was off a good earnings report, but if you want to trade a wild child, it's not doing much in the pre-market, but I would keep an eye on that close from yesterday at 8:30, high of the move 8.74. This is something that could give a little bit back, not a direct sympathy play, but man, the stock doubled and now peeling back.
A couple other stocks that were in the news that we had on our list to talk about here. And if there's anything in the chat you want to talk about, let us know as well. But BG, wild day for yesterday. Bungie gets the big pop. There was rumors that they were going to team up with, who is the
Core.
Glencore. And then it was announced after the bell, Bungie came out and said that they didn't see, you know, that there, it wasn't more of a deal. It was more just of teaming up. So that's why the stock's getting hit here this morning. Do we have the official, what the actual headline was, Spencer?
Well, it's a partnership. They're in talks with
North
American partnership. Yeah, North American partnership, not a sale of the company.
And that's why the stock's coming back. So everybody thought, oh, boom, they're going to sell the company there. There was even rumors floating around that could be as high as $100. Now it's just a partnership, so that's why the stock's getting back 5 points here this morning, giving back half of the gains from yesterday.
And interesting on this one, you did get the major pop intraday up to 82.40. Man, then you look at the high that you had on March 17th, 82.20. You could have easily gotten that. Now it's falling back. It's not giving all of it back here. So based on waiting till a stock gets back to its area before it took off, you need to wait for this to get back down to the $70 level. A lot of people are scratching their heads on this one, caught in that big, big run up. So could be some continued downside here in Bungie Limited. And is Glencore trade? I know Glencore had some big problems.
I don't believe it's trading in the U.S.
They had some big problems a couple years ago. Did they have some big problems? Remember when Switzerland did that devaluation or – remember that, like 3 or 4 years ago?
Goldfish memory here, Joel. Okay. Your memory's always been better than mine, so you can enlighten us, but no, I don't remember.
All right. Well, I can't remember. But Larry in the chat is asking about NOK, kind of a forgotten stock. Had some good news yesterday and got the pop, but it's
big time.
Yeah, but it's just fading.
Well, actually, it's not. I think it had a dividend paid out yesterday. So it's adjusted close, actually. So it's up again here because close is 654. The adjusted close actually 641 and 641.29 because it's partial dividend. So call it 641. So it's actually trading up 4 cents here in the pre-market at 645. So it is up again. Remember, obviously, this is trading over in Europe actively right now. So it's not like we're in the price discovery mode here. They're already discovering price over there. So it's trading up. It's tacking on a little bit more there because it is ex-dividend here today.
And got a little boost from its alliance. I guess they had a little spat going on with Apple. They've kind of mended that fence, and that gave it a little bit of a boost yesterday. And okay, so hey, Dennis, where'd you get that adjusted close from? Is that something that you have right on your platform?
Yeah, it's on my platform. That actually adjusted close is from Ready.
Okay.
So, because I'm trading on that, they adjust the close for you. And most of your, you know, obviously if you're, you know, dealing and they don't have the adjusted close, that's, you know, not helpful there. So hopefully, you know, your brokers, most of them do give you the adjusted close. Some of them miss it though. So, you know, it's important information to know when a stock goes ex dividend because, you know, stock pays a 50 cent dividend. You might think the stock's trading up 50 cents or trading down 50 cents. And meanwhile, it's actually trading flat. So, you know, it's very important to know when those ex dividend dates, especially when the dividend is significant. And, you know, when you're talking about Nokia, you know, we talk a 13 cent dividend here, 5% yield, it is significant. So it's important to know that because if you're just looking at this, you're saying, oh, what's going on with Nokia? It's trading down 2% here. Oh, no, it's ex dividend. It's not trading down at all.
All right, two stocks to deliver earnings after the close. Two retailers, PVH. So Dennis traded in this long before the report. Will you please? Yeah, could you please? This one, wow. This
held on well, too. Yeah. I mean, one thing to consider, if you think Amazon's eating everybody lunch, these are your apparel. You know, they make clothes, PVH. So Ralph Lauren, the same thing. So, you know, if you're going to buy clothes, it's not like, no, you have to go into a PVH store to buy. I don't know if they have their own stores. You know, they can sell the stuff easily on Amazon as well. So so it's not like it's its own brick and mortar store. It's more of the clothing makers. So, but that being said, it's been held on very well. I mean, you look at the chart of PVH, we're still off the highs. We got up to 138 back in 2014. So we're still significantly off. But I tell you, this year, we've done pretty well in PVH.
Yeah, I've done very well. And then another retailer reporting after the close, Guess, and that one, I mean, just got under $10, got a little bit of a rally. But if you look at the longer-term chart in that, it's not looking too good. So
trend's not your friend.
trend is not your friend. All right, S&P's quiet range here, up a buck, 23.99, trying to clear yesterday's high at 23.99.50. All-time high up there at 24.04.50. That could be a target on the upside. Spencer, you want to wrap things up and preview Thursday show?
Well, I want to ask you about tomorrow's show, Joel. We have one guest on the docket, Jerry Parker from Chesapeake Capital. You know him, Joel. Who's Jerry Parker?
Jerry Parker is one of the original turtles from Richard Dennis. Very interesting story. Richard Dennis, this is back in the mid-80s, just took interviews from non-traders, non-market-related people, looked for certain characteristics. He taught them the turtle trend-following system, and they made Mr. Dennis millions of dollars, and then they went out on their own. And they went on to be very successful traders. Jerry Parker is one of them. And we're going to talk something that we don't talk about much here, but it's part of the markets. He trades single stock futures. So we'll get a little insight into commodity trading and how he tackles those single stock futures. So looking forward to talking to Mr. Parker.
All right. That's it for our show today. You can catch the whole thing again on our podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Stitcher. Or just replay the show on YouTube, on the Benzinga YouTube channel. Please remember that all the information, material, and content on our show is for informational purposes only and not meant to be investing advice. Have a good rest of your Wednesday. We'll see you folks on Thursday for Jerry Parker.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, Forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.